On Wednesday, September 11th, we took a look at the previous night's primaries in Bridgeport on the Republican and Democratic side with Brian Lockhart from the Connecticut Post. Also, we heard from a gentleman who's trying to help and bring a presidential debate to Hartford in 2020. And we're also joined by John Rodriguez. He's now the winner of the Republican mayoral primary in Bridgeport.
Listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
And we thank you for that. 3:07, 7 past 3 o'clock right here in WICC 600. Hour number 2 of our get-together. We're 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And good enough to join us today because I'm sure he's jamming like crazy after last night with all this great coverage in the Connecticut Post. Brian Lockhart's with us. Brian, how you doing?
I'm good, Paul. How are you?
Good, good. Well, hey, I guess Ganem wins the absentees, Marilyn wins at the polls, and now we wait and see if she has any other cards up her sleeve here.
Yeah, and it's looking kind of grim for her at this point. As we reported, as we learned last night, yesterday evening, a little bit before the polls closed, her big backup plan of qualifying to be a third-party working families candidate in November fell through, according to the Secretary of the State and the town clerk. They say that she did not, her campaign, although her campaign had claimed to have qualified back in August, her campaign actually did not submit the necessary signatures or enough of the necessary signatures for her to have a ballot spot set aside in November.
Yeah.
And that was the premise of her campaign. I mean, she had said since January that she would be on that ballot in November. And I think there were plenty of supporters who didn't necessarily think that she would win the primary, but were comforted by the idea that she could, if she enjoyed enough of if it was close enough, that she would have momentum and be running as this third-party candidate for the next several weeks. And that really does not look like it's going to happen at this point.
And as you pointed out, in the stories that you guys have cranked out today, that apparently she's incensed, her staff can't understand this, that Chris Caruso commented on it too. They claim that they did support, or rather come forth and submit, rather, enough signatures. I guess they, by your story, they're tearing the office today apart, trying to find copies of this. But boy, I got to tell you that, listen, I don't know what goes on inside there, but you would think that would have been doubled and triple checked.
Yeah, I agree, because it was such a crucial part of their strategy. Now, I did talk to the town clerk this morning, so we only had the Secretary of the State to go on last night. Mm-hmm. I did talk to the town clerk this morning, and they confirmed what we were told by the Secretary of the State. They said she did not get enough signatures. Her staff turned in 14 pages of petitions on August 7th, about 15 minutes before the 4 p.m. deadline, and ultimately a bunch of those signatures were tossed out. They provided us with these 14 pages. They also provided us with a receipt that was issued to the Moore campaign, which states on it 14 pages. So
they're covering their backs. So it sounds like they have documentation then.
It does. There may be a lot of the signatures. Looking through these petitions, the majority of the signatures that were tossed out for individuals who are not registered voters. A smaller batch were tossed out because the names were illegible, and then there's a section for other. There's a couple of reasons given as to what, someone lives out of town, or a couple of people were tossed out because they're felons, and I have to get a little more information on that. The campaign could potentially at this point, I guess, sort of challenge some of these names that were tossed out. Yeah. There was some talk last night of another third party, something called the New Movement Party, being a vehicle.
I saw
for
that.
Moore's candidacy. But we confirmed today that does not seem possible either. That party does not have a ballot line in November.
So can she?
What was
Can she pull a Mike Jarjura here? And I remember that race very well, where he just bombarded Waterbury with pencils that said, right in Mike. Can she try that?
Back in 05.
Yeah.
I think 05, yeah. She could. I think people say one of Jarjura's advantages then was he was the incumbent.
Yeah.
She could do that. I mean, certainly, and I think this is probably what is the most frustrating thing for her campaign and for her supporters is yesterday's results showed that Ganim is definitely vulnerable. Mm-hmm. She won the machines, and that really should have been a moment of celebration for her campaign. But instead, they were just consumed with this new news that she hadn't made the ballot. She could continue that. It's tough. It's an uphill battle. It would be an uphill battle to be a third party candidate, frankly. And I think being a writing candidate is that much more difficult. She could do that. They could also potentially try and challenge some of these petitions that were tossed out. And they could also look at the absentee ballots. There's been precedent in Bridgeport for campaigns to challenge the absentee ballots.
Yeah, but as I said the first hour here, Brian, the one thing she does have to go on, as you just mentioned, that may fuel her and may, even to a point now, if they can do it legally, rejuvenate this campaign, is that they won at the machines where people walked in, actually filled out that little oval, stuck it in the machine. She won there. That's a huge statement.
Yeah, it is. And it was also a very close race. The mayor received 5,269 votes, and Senator Moore received 5,021 votes. So she won on the machines, and overall it was a very close race. Now, it doesn't matter. I mean, Ganim won, and unless in some way, shape, or form they can try and reverse those results, Ganim is the winner. So he has prime ballot placement. He's the Democrat. Democrats in Bridgeport tend to vote Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
So they just vote right across the line. But yes, there could be. But I don't know how realistic it's going to be. And the challenge for Moore, too, is frankly, this shows this whole debacle with these petitions really does seem to reveal a weakness, a disorganization within her primary campaign. Even last night when this news broke, like I said, they were shocked, and a lot of her advisors were at her headquarters. They were shocked, and you would think that a better organized campaign would have immediately been able to rebuff what the Secretary of the State said and pull out copies of petitions and say, no, the Secretary of the State is wrong. Here's the petitions. Here's who signed, have all this information. Tell us who was in charge of these petitions. Who was in charge of this project? And none of those answers were forthcoming, and they're not forthcoming today. And I think it does show that there was somebody dropped the ball. There was some disorganization there. So if she is going to continue her campaign, one would hope that it is a lot more organized.
Yeah, and again, there's going to be the overriding, any candidate, who knows, maybe Joe comes out and says, well, she can do whatever she wants, but they couldn't even handle petition signatures. He'd probably come out and say, how are they going to run the city, right? I mean,
right. You're already starting to hear some of that, and that's exactly one of the knocks, that will turn into a criticism of her.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Brian,
absolutely.
Final question. Now, which headquarters were you at last night?
So we had a reporter at Testos with Mayor Ganim and his folks, and then I was with the Moore folks last night.
Well, the key question is, and I was talking about this earlier in the week, my years of doing this, how was the food? That's the key question. Come on, Brian, as you well know what election nights are, you go in, you scope the place out, and then you immediately go to yourself as a working reporter, because I've done this, where's the food? You know that.
Yeah.
Right?
I got to admit, I really can't give you a robust report on the food. I can tell you that we had some photos, and there were plenty of overflowing chafing dishes.
Nice.
At Testo.
Testo, of course,
I think Moore's was maybe a little more frugal.
Okay, yeah, shocking that the food was good there, right? Hey, Brian, listen, thanks. We know you're busy. Thanks for coming in, checking in with us, and we'll be in touch. It's going to be fun.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Bye-bye. See? I tell you, the food, I said it yesterday, right? You cover election night, you walk into wherever you are, you scope out. Okay, there's where the candidate... Okay, where's the candidate going to be? Okay, over there. What time are they coming down? All right, fine. And I can plug my recorder in there? Good, you can. And the press releases are here, and they'll... okay, that's great. Where's the food? That's it. Oh, they're bringing out chafing dishes. Oh, yeah. Oh, look at that. It's election night in America, kids. Trust me. Booze doesn't come out till after the declaration of victory.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
Well, hi there. It's hour number three of our four-hour get-together. Hope you and yours are doing fine and dandy on this Wednesday midweek here at WICC 600, online at WICC600.com. It is Connecticut Today, and Paul Pacelli is my name. Aaron Johnson on the other side of the glass. Well, last time this happened was 1996, Connecticut hosting a debate during the presidential campaign that was at the Bushnell, all right, back in 96. Could it happen again next year in 2020? Well, the group getting behind this, the big push for this, is the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. And joining us right now is the foundation's president, Jay Williams. Jay, Paul here in Bridgeport. How are you, sir?
Paul, good afternoon. I am excellent. How are you?
I'm good. I'm doing well today, Jay, on this Wednesday. And it happened last time in 96. So 24 years later, you folks at the Hartford Foundation, I guess, Jay, are what, leading the push here for this to possibly happen again? Talk about this.
Well, we are trying to do our part. The push is actually being led by a group of community stakeholders, who, some of whom were involved in helping to bring the 1996 debate here to Hartford, Connecticut. So there was a process by which communities across the country made it known through the application with the Presidential Commission on Presidential Debates. We were approached initially to see if we would assist with the application fee, which we gladly did. And then we were subsequently approached about perhaps expanding our involvement. And because it so happened that we are also in the beginning stage of our new strategic plan, our board had a rigorous debate discussion. We had a lot of engagement with stakeholders and decided that we would indeed make a public commitment of resources to help secure, hopefully help secure, a debate here in Hartford, Connecticut.
Jay, for folks who aren't familiar with the group, what is and what does the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving do as its main mission?
Thank you. That's a great question. So the Hartford Foundation is for Public Giving is a community foundation. We serve Hartford and 28 surrounding communities in the central Connecticut. We are one of the oldest and largest community foundations in the country. And a community foundation, by definition, is a nonprofit organization that focuses its grants on a geographic location, and we receive our donations from individuals from across our region and really across the state of Connecticut, but primarily concentrated in our region, who are very generous and philanthropic. They provide us with those dollars. We invest those dollars with an eye toward perpetuity, and then it allows us to, every year, provide grants to nonprofit organizations across our region. And those nonprofit organizations can be involved in any number of things, particularly, you know, the focus of our strategic work right now is helping to grow opportunity through inclusion. But donors also have the freedom to support the arts, support basic human needs, community and economic development, education. They can and mostly give in our region, but our donors are also free to give anywhere on the planet. So by definition, a community foundation performs that stewardship function, and we believe that you know, we are truly blessed to have the level of generosity that we've had for, you know, multiple decades now, and that we have an obligation to help lead you know, to improve the quality of life in the communities that we serve.
Jay Williams is the guest, and Jay, you said a couple of seconds ago about the notion that you're going to put some of your muscle behind this. When you first heard about this idea of trying to get the foundation involved as part of the push to get a debate here in 2020, perhaps, what were your thoughts on that?
So we thought that this was a particularly unique opportunity, you know, not about self-aggrandizement. This is an opportunity for the eyes of the nation and indeed other parts of the world to be trained on Hartford, Connecticut, with a debate that is going to, you know, a debate process is one of the bedrock principles of our society. No matter where you fall on the political spectrum, there are issues that are being discussed across this country that are in line with the work that we're doing here at Hartford, Connecticut. So to have an opportunity to have the President of the United States and whoever happens to be the challenger, again, doesn't matter where you are on the political spectrum, whether you agree or disagree, there will be policy implications. There will be government resource allocations that either could help advance some of the work that is happening here on the ground or perhaps hinder some of that. And we think that it's important that people are very well informed, that there is decency and the dialogue and the discussion and the debate, that people are given the opportunity to hopefully participate and hear and see firsthand the implications of why their vote is important. So it really, you know, I think helps to elevate the work that we do. And it's not in a selfish way, because the work that we do is really trying to improve the quality of life, trying to help increase access to opportunity, help to try to decrease some of the growing disparities in this community that have been exacerbated by race, place, or income. So to that end, we were very excited, but we also knew that there were risks. Some people might see this as partisan politics, which it absolutely is not, and we're prohibited from doing. Others might see it as, is this the best and highest and best use of the resources that we have been afforded? So we evaluated all that, Paul, and decided that there were exceptional and compelling reasons to try to be a part of this.
You know, Jay, you cannot put a price. I mean, you can't put a price on it, I guess, because it's going to cost money, and you've devoted some of those resources. But as somebody who runs an organization like this, and as somebody, as people see when it comes to like the NCAAs that were in Hartford or the Excel Center a few months ago, it's very hard to put a value on just getting eyeballs on your city, whether it's through sports or special events like this. Yeah, there's an upfront cost, but
right,
but the opportunity to have something literally, Jay, broadcast to the world out of Connecticut is something that you just got to take a shot at.
Paul, you completely understand that. People want to say, okay, well, there are tangible economic benefits that will accrue to the region from thousands of people convening and the opportunities. But you are absolutely right. There are a set of intangible opportunities and benefits that come when you have an opportunity to showcase your city and your region. So when I say Hartford, I mean the city of Hartford, but I'm also talking about the greater Hartford region and by extension, Connecticut, because this is indeed a small state. So, you know, if there is a showcase and a spotlight on the greater Hartford region, it bodes well for the state. And to the extent that we have an opportunity to highlight some of the challenges that exist here and the innovative things that nonprofits and other organizations and stakeholders are doing to address them, it also gives us an opportunity to highlight some of the challenges that still exist. And these challenges and opportunities aren't unique and specific to Hartford. They are challenges and opportunities that communities across the country and indeed maybe in other parts of the world are facing. So you're right. There is risk. There are some of these things that are going to be difficult to measure, but the notion of having the eyes of the world trained on your community gives you a chance to put your best foot forward. And ultimately, you know, the debate itself is a 90-minute event, but it's a year of activity leading up to the debate. It's the activity surrounding the debate, and then it will be afterward when the election happens in November, and then an administration either continues or a new administration takes root in Washington, D.C., the policies, the approaches, the resource allocation decisions, we want to know that there was an opportunity for the people of the region and greater Hartford to have been a part of that, to weigh in on it, and to continue to be involved.
Jay, do you know whether you're bidding for a presidential debate or one of the it's usually a single VP debate, or is it a kind of thing where they tell you it could be either?
They tell you it could be either. It would be, obviously, the ultimate goal is to land one of the three presidential debates. But as you pointed out, one of the four debates will be a vice presidential debate. So my understanding, I wasn't here in Connecticut in 1996,
yeah,
but it's my understanding that initially Hartford was selected for a vice presidential debate, and then at the last minute it was changed to a presidential debate. So we are hopeful. There are six communities across the country vying for this. There were four opportunities total, so we are hopeful. You know, those seem to be pretty good odds, but we won't know until the Commission on Presidential Debates makes an announcement.
Are we talking about the Bushnell as a side again?
The Bushnell is one of the sites that was under consideration along with the convention center. So ultimately, that decision is made by the Commission on Presidential Base based on logistics and security and a whole host of other things. So those are two of the likely sites.
You know, Jay, I had suggested before the segment here, well, heck, why don't you just go to the XL Center, you know, sell 15,000 seats, you know, hot dogs, air horns. Can you imagine? I mean, how great would that be? Just make it like a UConn home game, man. The crowd would go crazy. That's not going to happen, is it?
Yeah, I'm not sure if the candidates would like that, or depending on which candidate gets more of their supporters in, yeah, that could be an unfair home court advantage. So while I certainly am a fan of the XL Center and hope to see it you know, have a new lease on life, right now the venues seem to be either the Bushnell or the convention center.
So now what happens, Jay? Take us through. I'm sure phone calls, meetings, more phone calls, more meetings, but I would imagine there's got to be a lot of face-to-face here with the debate commission. But, you know, they know what the Bushnell is like, but I'm sure there's a lot of just face-to-face interaction here.
Ironically, Paul, there isn't.
So really?
The process, as we understand, we are not privy to the inner workings of the Commission on Presidential Debate. So what did happen is that for those six cities that were quote-unquote finalists, the Commission on Presidential Debate, my understanding is, did quiet site visits, very quiet site visits, to just determine the actual logistical footprint of the facilities and the resources to see if those communities could indeed meet that threshold. After that, it has been radio silence. They have whatever process that they go through, whatever evaluation criteria. We have not been privy to that. We have not lobbied. We do not think that that would be appropriate. So the understanding that I have, that we have, is that sometime in the next 6 weeks or so, by the end of October, that there is likely to be an announcement, but all the inner machinations of how they ultimately come to their decision, we are not privy to, have had no conversations. At least no one at the foundation has had any conversations, so we're just kind of in a waiting game at this point.
Well, I mean, when you think about it, obviously, that's, you know, it's kind of like, Jay, you know, restaurant critics, right? You don't know, honestly, you don't announce, okay, the New York Times restaurant critic is
Absolutely.
Here. No, you don't do that. Did they slip in there, they eat, and they write their story.
They come in, do what they have to do, and I think it is appropriate that, you know, that we respect the integrity of the process, but want also to make it known that we believe that there are innumerable benefits, not only to the region, but to the viewers, to the country, for those that will be watching to the debate, to have it in a place like Hartford, Connecticut, which you know, is a working town and a town that really reflects, you know, so many of the challenges and the opportunities that are a part of the national discussion. We think there are, you know, many reasons, compelling reasons, and that we are hopeful that ultimately that's what the commission decides, so we can showcase and put Hartford and the greater Hartford region forward to the rest of the country and the rest of the world. And we've already, I'll tell you, had some interest from some national stakeholders who think it is unique and exciting that a nonprofit community foundation has stepped up in this role and who have expressed some interest in partnering with us. So, you know, I want to be clear that we are going to be in line with a lot of other partners, corporate and otherwise, to ultimately pull this off, because the budget is estimated to be between $5.5 and $6 million. So while, you know, our $1 million is on the table, there will clearly need to be other partners and stakeholders.
Now, does that only happen, Jay, if we get the debate, or did you folks or the other corporate partners here, what was there, I mean, for lack of a better term, was there an entrance fee, or did they want anybody with some upfront money to show how serious you were? How did that work?
No.
Okay.
So there was an application fee that's around $9,500, okay. But you know, it is in a bidding war, and people have to sort of move their chips to the center of the table to demonstrate the seriousness. You know, you make the application fee, you go through the evaluation criteria, as I referenced, whatever that looked like in terms of the Commission on Presidential Debates, and then if selected, you have to be prepared. When I say you, the communities have to be prepared to come up with the resources. So what we wanted to do was to send an early, clear, clarion signal that we, as a corporate citizen, a nonprofit corporate citizen here, as a community partner, hope that, you know, us helping to lead the way would inspire and bring others along, and that has to be the case if ultimately Hartford is selected, and we need to ultimately come up with the $5.5 to $6 million that is estimated to pull the debate off.
Do you think that would be difficult, Jay, or do you think there'd be enough corporate-minded people up there and others, philanthropic and otherwise, to make this happen easily?
I've been in Hartford for 2 years, and from what I've seen, the passion, the love, the commitment that corporations and other key stakeholders have toward this city makes me believe that it would not be insurmountable or not that difficult. You know, there are, you know, always a shortage of resources, always many other places and demands on the resources that are available. But an opportunity like this that, you know, doesn't come that often, I think we would see the corporate community and others step up to the plate to ensure that we could showcase Hartford, the greater Hartford region, Central Connecticut, to the rest of the world.
You know, Jay, in closing here, I'll bet you that if you just, I'm sure you'll be able to get the money, but I'll bet you if you just went to the general public and say, help us out, bring a presidential debate here, I don't know about you, but I think a lot of people in this state might ante up a few bucks just on their own to do it.
Well, you know, I think that level of passion and interest in the well-being of a community and you know, ideally, because it doesn't matter where you fall on a political spectrum, you know, your candidate potentially, if you subscribe to either of the two major parties. I understand that there's a wide variety of political parties beyond that. But, you know, your candidate will be here representing their views on the issues of today. So we think that, you know, we have an obligation to lead. We're eager and happy to do that. We appreciate the other leaders that will step up if Hartford is selected and look forward to hopefully hearing some positive news in the next few weeks.
Jay Williams, president of the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving, getting behind, along with some other folks, the bid for a presidential debate in Hartford. Jay, thank you. We'll be in touch. Appreciate it.
I'll look forward to it. Thank you much.
Thanks. Bye-bye. There you go.
Crazy ideas, madness, opinions, ranting and or raving. The lines are open. 203-333-9422. Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli. WICC 600.
And once again, thanks to our last guest, Jay Williams, who heads the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. If you want to hear that interview again or any of our interviews, past or coming up, get our podcasts. Aaron Johnson puts them together every day after the show here. They're usually available after 7. And you can go to our website at WICC600.com or wherever you get your podcasts, search terms WICC600 or get them on Facebook as well. The Democrats weren't the only ones going at it last night in Bridgeport. The Republicans did as well. And we welcome back a gentleman we had in studio a few days ago. He is now the Republican nominee for mayor of the city of Bridgeport. John Rodriguez is with us. John, how are you? Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I'm very, very ecstatic here. I'm humbled by this whole experience, and I'm prepared to go forward and do what I have to do. And first and foremost, I want to just say this is the 18th anniversary of 9/11, and I want us to never forget them, and God bless them, and to my dad, who also passed on that time. But how are you, Paul?
I'm good, John. I'm good. Good afternoon. You get the win here, and listen, there weren't a lot of votes cast. You know, when I said before, it's not your fault, John. I said, shame on the Republicans. You have about 4,500 of them in Bridgeport. Only 600 of them showed up. But you know what? It doesn't matter whether it's 1 or 100,000. You won. You defeated Ethan Book and Deshaun Francis. You're right. And like every athlete says, a win is a win is a win. That's it.
Correct.
So now you're looking at a landscape here, John, where, you know, we assume the Democratic nominee is going to be Joe Ganim. However, you don't know because, as you probably know, Marilyn Moore is upset that she's not on the Working Families Party line here. They're going to try and get that rectified. So it's either going to be a two-person or a three-person race coming up in November. How do you think you're going to stand out there, John?
Well, I'm taking both stances, whether it's with Mayor Gannon and Moore, or if it's just Gannon. My point is, it'll be about... if the same, if we have the same results, we'll have approximately maybe 11 to 13,000 voters coming out. Mm-hmm. And as you know, we have approximately 47, 48,000. And I'm hoping to get that bunch. If I can just get 20% average, 7 or 8,000 of them, and the unaffiliated and the Republicans out, and the word, you know, I think a lot of people are saying, forget the D, forget the R. Who is going to actually do the job for us? And from the people I've been speaking to that are Democrats, they're saying, you know what? I'm tired, tired, tired. If you look at the front page of the Connecticut Post, who do you see? Joe Gannon, and who's behind him? The machine. And that's what people see. And the results for them, is they get crumbs while the top part of the Democratic Party enriches itself. So the people are fed up. It's a perfect storm for them to be replaced, just like the third term mayor in New Haven replaced. Well, not replaced. He just wasn't voted in.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm going positive and I'm listening to the people, the business people also. They want to come in and invest, but not under this administration. Everyone is fed up. Of course, you're going to have 11 to 13,000 that are going to jump up for joy and say, Gannon's the best. But what about the other citizens of the street, the other voters of the city? They're fed up. They're fed up. They've had it, and they want better. They want to be respected. And to be quite honest with you, I'm right there, and if no one else will step up, I will step up with my horn and say, we want the respect here. And if you can't do it, step down. You've had over 30 years here. That's enough. This is your town, your dream. It's time for us to have this, our town and our dream. Period.
John, you say you hope the votes are out there. You just gave me some rough numbers. Are there specific areas of the city that you think you could make inroads? Is this citywide, or because of your resources and everything, are there maybe one or two areas of Bridgeport where you think you could really tap in and hit a nerve?
That would be the East End and the South End. The inner part of the city that are really experiencing problems, mm-hmm. With education, with crime, unemployment, poverty. And those are the people that are really saying, you know what, this is hopeless here. It's the same, same old, same old thing for the last 10, 20, 30 years. And they said, no matter who gets up there, it's the same. We receive crumbs while the elite Democrats receive millions. So that's my core right there. The Latino organization, the pastors, I've been speaking to them, pastors, all pastors throughout the Bridgeport area. That's a strong segment of mine, and I plan to work with them so we can work the communities. The people are fed up, and the message, my point is, I need to get that message out. And so my Republican counterparts, I need your help. You know, sometimes my Republicans are afraid to go out there for various reasons. Number one, if you say you're a Republican, typically people will take your head off. Well, I'm a bold Republican. This is the new Republican Party, which has everyone in it. We need everyone to be a Republican here. Whether you're black, white, there's no color here. We're Republicans that are trying to do the right thing, get the ship back afloat, and go forward with our plan, the people's plan, not the politician's plan, which has been going on for who knows how long. And it's enough. And you hear the passion in my voice, because this is a fight that I will fight for. My family's here, my next generation, and my daughter and my granddaughter, three generations. And we're fighting, mm-hmm. and we're not taking it sitting down. And I need everyone's help here. Forget the letter on your chest. Do the right thing. Let's get this ship right. If the people aren't doing the job properly, remove them and put someone in there that can at least try to do the right thing with appropriate help, of course, because you must surround yourself with the people that can assist you to do the job right.
John, I know you mentioned education the other day when you were here. I know that's a pet issue of yours, but along with education, what might be the other one or two key issues that you're going to hammer home no matter who you're facing in November?
It's crime. We have to do a far better job with crime. If the limits for murder were very high, for assault, rape, overall quality of life is so far down. And we have to do a better job. If it's going to be Chief Perez there, then he really has to bring his A game to this city. He has to reach out to Boston, New York, and other successful police departments that can assist him. I'm a humble man. If I don't know something, I will go to someone who does know and try to get the proper funds and the education to do a better job. And that's the key here. We're having a tremendous problem with crime here. At the same time, with the pastors going out into the street and really starting to reach out to the youth of the city, it's important to give them hope.
Mm-hmm.
If they feel hopeless, they're going to have bad decisions, and the next thing you know, they wind up in jail or dead. We need the youth of this city are assets. If we can use them properly, if we can assist them to be assets to themselves, let alone the city, that'll be the beginning of this city being a strong city again, which it really needs to do. We really need a strong city here. So it's definitely crime, taxes. With an educated workforce, it reduces so many negatives. Negatives will be crime, unemployment, mm-hmm. Poverty rates will be reduced, and it will increase the educational system, period, which means employers and businesses will now look at us and say, hey, I have an educated workforce here, and the taxes are going, well, I beg your pardon, not taxes yet, but if crime is down, educated workforce, let's start investing in Bridgeport, because it's only a matter of time, and I'd rather have it start now than 4, 5, 6 years down the line. And we can do it. We can do it. We get the people together and say, we're tired and we want more for us. And more for us would be lower taxes, better lower crime totals, jobs, extremely better educational system that actually works for our kids, and not just programs that are systematically put into the school systems and aren't really effective with our children here in the inner city.
John, what does it tell you when you look at the results from the Democratic side last night that it was such a close race between the mayor and Marilyn Moore, and the mayor winning apparently because of absentee ballots, Marilyn
yes.
Moore winning at the polling places? What does that tell you, if anything?
Well, that tells me what I first started saying. The people are fed up. Those that did come out are concerned, and they say, we've had it. Because basically, Marilyn Moore beat them with the popular vote. And then naturally, because of the absentee ballots, then Gannon won. And you know, you have to question that to a certain degree. Naturally, you can't put your finger on it until there's 100% proof. But we really need to watch what's going on. We need to go forward and say, what exactly, where are all those votes coming from? Are they concentrated in a certain part of the city or certain institutions? Or, you know, we need to take a good look at that, get the flashlight, focus on it, and just ask questions. I'm not saying there's anything illegal here. I'm just saying, let's take a good look at this.
Because
every time there's a close race, there always seems to be an abundance of absentee ballots here. And if it's legit, you know what? Fine. But if you're not really taking a good look at it, so we can,
I know what you mean. No, I know. Like I said before, John, you have to assume that everything is legal and on the up and up until somebody has evidence otherwise. John, thank you. Good luck. We'll have you. We'll talk to you several times before then. Get some new pairs of shoes because I know you'll be walking the neighborhoods. John Rodriguez, the Republican nominee for mayor in Bridgeport. Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There you go. All right. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Would you entertain voting for Mr. Rodriguez? Maybe you're a disaffected Democrat. Maybe you were in the Marilyn Moore camp and not happy that the opponent won, the incumbent mayor. Possible vote for John Rodriguez or not? Or are you blue and D all the way?